Okay, we are still early, huh? We are really early. So it looks like more and more people can come earlier, huh? So Pamasuri suggests we start at 8. Yeah. Maybe it's a good idea. So we got extra 15 minutes. But today we stick to schedule. Huh? About 8:15 or 8:10, or maybe 8:10 we can start the puja. Well, now the puja take a bit longer, more people. Yeah? So we start at 8:10. Huh? We got 7 more minutes. Yeah? Anybody who is first time here, you look new. You meditate before? Ah, good. Sadhu. You are familiar with the Buddhist teaching? Oh, very good. What type of meditation you do? Okay. Your object of meditation is what? Huh? Oh, means you develop anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath. Huh? Okay. Sadhu, yeah. Do you know why you do anapanasati or not? Okay. Later I will explain a bit. Huh? Maybe we make use of the time. Huh? You see, to understand meditation, you need to understand clearly, what are you doing in the name of meditation? Yeah. If you don't know what you are doing, you just follow instruction and do, you become gullible. Gullible means you believe what people tell you. Yeah. If you do breathing, you are doing vipassana. Then sometimes you may hear people say, if you do breathing, it's samatha. Then you do rising, falling is vipassana. So the two become different. So when people don't understand, they end up saying all this. What is vipassana? Vipassana is not a technique or a method or what they call something that you call can do one. You cannot do vipassana. Vipassana can only arise when you have the ability to insight into phenomena. Means the mind has to be completely silent without thought. Because vipassana consists of two words. We are the three characteristics of nature. I just rub off. Just now was on the board there. Passana is to insight into. So any meditation that can allow you to train your mind to develop the ability can be described as vipassana training. But it's not a technique or a method itself. Well, vipassana is not defined by the method and the technique that you do. You can do any method, any technique, as long as you understand what they are for. Method and technique are actually skillful means to train the mind. Is not really meditation yet. The Buddha knew the mind, if you don't train, is heedless, it thinks a lot. That's why we have the 5 hindrances on top. Huh? The 5 mental hindrances are very powerful, the Buddha said. They will hinder your mind from becoming peaceful. So these 5 hindrances, if they are arise, if they arise within your mind state, then it will hinder you from developing the inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness to meditate. Then your mind can never be in the meditative state to meditate. Given this understanding, then you will have to ask yourself, do I have this hindrance? Then you look at the board, what are they? The Buddha mentioned sensual desire, ill will. lethargic mind or sloth and torpor, sleepy mind. The fourth one is restlessness of mind. The mind that is not peaceful is full of problem, very restless. It's restless because there is fear, there is worry, there is anxiety, there is sorrow and lamentation. All this contribute to the hindrance, which is restlessness. The last one is when you don't have faith and confidence in yourself and the teaching, you have doubt, you're not sure what all this thing is all about. So when there is hindrance, then you know you cannot meditate. So what must you do? Human beings' problem is they go and control, suppress and fight the hindrance. The Buddha said, no, you don't do that. If you do that, you will get trapped. What you need to develop is the opposite five spiritual faculty. When you have them, the hindrance will be overcome. It will just cease on its own. This is the real understanding of meditation. So meditation is about training the mind to have the spiritual faculty so that the hindrance is gone. And when the hindrance is gone, you naturally enter the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness. And that mind, no need object of meditation, no need to train anymore. You just sit, it's silent, it's still, it's already the meditative mind because the spiritual faculties are there. But Buddha knew not everybody has that. So they introduced skillful means to train the mind. That's why some ask you to do metta first. Then some ask you to develop training of mind by using a method and a technique. All these method and technique, like anapanasati, or noting the rising and falling of the abdomen, or dynamic meditation, chanting, and all the skillful means, they are just various skillful means to train the mind so that this mind is not heedlessly lost in thought, so that this mind is with the moment, because our breath is always within the moment. All of your object of meditation is within the moment. So when you understand all this, then you do with understanding. Then you don't become gullible. You don't just, every time you're not doing anapanasati, you are not meditating. Every time you don't note rising, falling, you are not doing vipassana. Not knowing that vipassana cannot be done. Vipassana is not a method, not a technique. And anapanasati is also not a meditation. It's just a skillful means to train the mind to be mindful. Then later on you can use it to meditate. But ultimately you have to go beyond anapanasati and all these various method and technique. Method and technique are a series of instruction to do things. They got nothing to do with noble eightfold path. The real meditation is noble eightfold path. So when you understand all this, you are not gullible anymore. Your mind has more clarity. Then when you do with understanding, you progress very fast. You will not be like trapped within the mind state that don't understand what is going on. Okay. For the time being, we stop there. 8:10, we can start our puja. Today, who are the one making the offering? The main people. The main character. Sito account, maybe we get Stephanie to light. She haven't light before, Yeah, Stephanie, come. You and Sito, light the candle and the incense. No, come. We have to start the puja soon, Then we can get ready. Where's the lighter you must ask me for? Oh, Sian, yeah, Sian will know. It's okay, I have. Thank you. Yeah, we wait for them to get ready. Yeah? Come. Sit or come. Light the incense. Then we can start to rejoice. Okay, so finally we got it. Okay, we can stand when you form a line, then we can start from the altar. Okay, start with the tray. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Those at the back can face each other, face each other, turn around and face each other, face each other, follow Susan, yes. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Oh, this is a different lotus. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Down there, down there. Mi Fong, down there. Never mind, down there, down there. Down there, down there better. Okay, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, 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 sadhu. Okay, thank you so much. Yeah, you can be seated. We shall now pay respect to Triple Gem. Compose your mind, develop the faith, sadhu, then the virya, then pay respect mindfully. Bhadang pujami. Dhammang pujami. Sanghang pujami. Okay, you can be seated now. Turn to page 4, the chanting book. We have explained before, the purpose of puja is to help us develop the five spiritual faculties and at the same time cultivate wholesomeness. The wholesome mind that has this good state of mind state that can rejoice in wholesomeness is very beautiful. That's why we rejoice with the generosity of all those who has made this puja offering to the Buddha and the Triple Gem. Then we rejoice with all their wholesomeness and generosity. Then we rejoice with their goodness, their kindness, their sincerity, their generosity, and all of the beautiful character and personality that manifests from all this understanding. So we rejoice. Then we rejoice with all those Kayanamitta or Dhamma friends who can benefit from all this activity and wholesomeness. Then as we walk the path of Dhamma, we get to know each other. Then we can learn to support, counsel, motivate and encourage one another. So Kayanamitas that are sincere will have all this understanding and they will benefit tremendously from all this. So do not underestimate the power of devotional practice which we call puja. And the Buddha actually recommended this practice. Before any session start, you have a Piri Puja. Then later on, you will have a closing puja where we do more things. Then in between, we have our Dhamma class. We meditate, we train our mind, we renew our precepts, we take refuge. Then we chant all the essential Dhamma, the salutation to the Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha. All these are very, very important teachings and understanding that the Buddha actually recommended. So that when you walk the path of Dhamma, this training is very essential. That's why you have to do all this with understanding. Otherwise, you will end up like what I discussed with a few Kayanamitta before we came. I realized that during the early days, most Buddhists, not all, they just do what they were taught. So to them, everything is like separate entity and so on. They where though there is puja or devotional practice, then they just do. Then they say, sadhu, you just sadhu. A lot of them don't even know what sadhu is. Then some say, rejoice. Then they say, rejoice lah, you don't know me. Then what is rejoice? Rejoice in what? Don't know. Then some, a bit more advanced, read up the book. All the significance of all the offering, the Dhamma involved, the significance of flower, clear water, incense, candle, and all those things. That's why we chant all this with understanding. Then we add in something, we invoke the power of merit to make the aspiration. So all these are very, very important and very useful. And when you do with understanding, you progress very fast. You stand to develop all this wholesomeness in a very different way. So that's why I make use of this opportunity to explain a little bit so that new people can understand. And because it's recorded, those who cannot attend, they also will develop the understanding. Okay, now we will go to page 4 of the chanting book. We will do our pre-puja chanting. First, we will chant the Namo Tassa. This one, the meaning is paying homage to the Buddha. The meaning is very beautiful. Homage to thee, the blessed one, the worthy one, and the fully enlightened one. So when you understand who the Buddha is, how special and how virtuous and how wise he is, your faith in him become different. Your salutation to him become different. Then we move on to renew our three refuges. We continue to take refuge in the Triple Gem. Then we renew our precept because we have this right view with regards to law of karma, and we heed the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil. That's why we maintain our precept. Then we will chant the puja offering with understanding. Then finally we invoke the power of this understanding to help us develop our aspiration so that we can walk the path of Dhamma easily. Okay, now we will start. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamisu micacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya macchatana dattana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Vivachanda padipa puja. Gandhi. na sarapaditena dipena tamadang sina tiloka dipang sambudang pujayami tamonudang kanda sambarayutena dupenaha suganghina pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bacana muttamang vanna ganda guno petang tang kasuma santati pujayami munindasa siri pada sarurohe puje mi budang kasumena nena punnena matena cha hotu moha pupang milayati yata idang me tatayati vinasabhavang adivase tu no bante paniyang parikapita anukampang upadaya patiganhatu muttamang. Okay, turn to page 18. Viva Chandi, aspiration. By invoking the understanding of the significance of all this offering. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness of ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fire of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the paths and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Now we make our overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born of all this offering, may we, our spiritual faculties of Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya, be further strengthened until they become balas of powers, then sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who had the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will pay respect to Tripa Jaya. Viva Chanda Thai tradition. Arahaṁ sammā sambuddho bhagavā Buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādemi. Svākāto bhagavata dhammo dhammaṃ namasāmi. Supatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho sanghaṃ namāmi. Okay, you can be seated now. Okay, for those who already know how to meditate, you can start straight away. Then for those who are new, maybe I will just give you some very simple, short instruction and understanding. Just now, before we start, I already give you some briefing. The key to meditation is to develop the understanding of what you are doing in the name of meditation. So according to the Buddha, it's very simple. He said the reason why living being cannot meditate or develop the inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness, which is the meditative mind, is because they have a lot of mental hindrance. So this mental hindrance, there are five, the Buddha said. These two categories of essential Dhamma, they are one pair. But if you don't have understanding, it's of not much use to you. So if you look at this first five hindrance, if you check, most heedless people who has not developed the training of the mind or developed mindfulness and the spiritual faculty, they have them all. Especially the first two, sensual desire, ill will. These are positive and negative reactions of mind within life. Every moment of sense experience, when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile, feel, or think, your mind has this conditioning, wrong view, to react. Because you have certain preference, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. Preferences. So if you do it so often, every moment of sense experience, when you see something or hear something or think of something, then it becomes habitual. And if throughout the day, through habitual tendency, you constantly arise these two hindrances, it will hinder your mind from becoming peaceful. That's why your mind develops all this restlessness, doubt, sleepiness, and all those hindrance. And this is how the living being become heedless. So heedlessness is very dangerous, the Buddha said. The heedless are as if dead spiritually, no chance at all. What you need to develop is the opposite five spiritual faculty to counter them, the Buddha said. Don't go and fight them, don't go and suppress, control or resist them. Just allow them to be. You just tell yourself, untrained mind is like that. Heedless mind is like that. The hindrance will be there. So, in order to develop the opposite five, which are called the spiritual faculty, the name is spiritual faculty that can understand spiritual teaching. That's why you need this five to cultivate, to meditate, to develop the understanding of the teaching. Whereas the hindrance, mental hindrance, hinders your mind from becoming peaceful, from having these spiritual faculties. So when you understand this, you will focus on this. The five spiritual faculties, you look at it, Saddha is faith or confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. Virya is a spiritual zeal that comes about after you understand who the Buddha is, how special he is. He is the fully enlightened one, not only enlightened, perfect in enlightenment. Fully enlightened in the sense that he is the wisest and the most virtuous teacher or living being ever to be born during that time. So to have him as your guide and teacher, you should have a lot of gratitude and respect towards him, and your faith should be unshakable. So when you develop this, you have a lot of calmness. Your mind becomes very composed, very confident. Then you got no more doubt. You got no more restlessness of mind. You are very peaceful, very calm. That's how you can meditate. Then it will drive you with spiritual faculty or zeal or spiritual tenacity to walk this way. Virya will make sure you are not sleepy. That's why the hindrance will be overcome. Then when you have mindfulness, which is the silent mind without thought, fully aware within the moment, without thought, there is no thinking, there is no conditioning, no duality, no fear, no worry, no anxiety, no like and dislike. That's why it is silent, peaceful. Sati is very important, spiritual faculty. Without sati, you cannot be heedful. Without sati, you cannot be peaceful. Without sati, you cannot be silent. So to have sati, you must just be aware without thought. That's why when you are aware without thought, you don't think. There is no sensual desire and you will. But living beings cannot be mindful because they have not trained. The hindrance are there. The mental hindrance are so powerful until they become habitual tendency. That's why they find it so difficult to have even a moment of peace. That's why they need method and technique to concentrate the mind, to focus the mind, so that all thought kill into one point, one-pointedness, so that it cannot think. And then they experience peace. But that is a conditioned state. That is not a free mind. So all those technique and method that go and focus, concentrate, and develop samatha or absorption, that is not mindfulness. That is energy field. You can try it initially, then you can find out for yourself. Yeah. So development of meditation needs sati, not concentration, not focusing. Then when you pay respect mindfully, body and mind as one without thought, then whatever you do in life, you maintain attention. Body and mind as one. Slow down your thinking. Be with the moment more and more. Be attentive to things. You don't have to slow down your action. You just have to allow your mind and your action to be together. Then later on, your mind, your awareness, and your feeling to be together. The emotion. That's why there are four foundations for you to anchor your mind, to develop mindfulness. First is kaya, physical body. Then your feeling foundation. Then you move on to the content of consciousness, which is all your mind state, mental states. Then the last one is you deal with Dhamma, or the truth that the Buddha taught, the teachings. The key teaching, or the essential teaching, the essence of the Buddha's teaching is the Four Noble Truths. So if you develop mindfulness, then you reflect, contemplate, and develop the second turning wisdom. Then that wisdom will prepare the base for you to develop the meditative wisdom born of the third turning. So all these are related. So sati is the first enlightenment factor. Without sati, you cannot be heedful. Without sati, you cannot investigate the Dhamma, which is the second enlightenment factor. Then without sati, you cannot cultivate four foundations of mindfulness. Without sati, you cannot cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. And without sati, you cannot be heedful. That's why the Buddha said, if you are heedless spiritually, you are as if dead. Whereas if you are hateful, you are destined for enlightenment. So the key to training your mind is to develop sati. So all of our meditations center on this, to train your mind if you need to train. Most people need to train because you don't have the spiritual faculty developed. So how do you train? In order to reverse all this heedless thinking, habitual tendency, you have to stop the thinking. But you cannot stop it by using the mind or the thought or the will, because it will give it more energy and make you more restless. So you can actually use a skillful means, which normally I share. We call it the mind sweeping method, where you sweep your mind through your forehead down to your leg, where you just feel relaxed, you don't think. When you constantly feel and relax, your mind becomes peaceful because it doesn't think. So this is the first deconditioning of this heedless thinking. You can do it for 5-10 minutes, it will help you a lot. Then after that, when you are more calm and more peaceful, you develop sati. The main focus is to decondition your heedless thinking, then use a skillful mean to anchor your mind so that it's aware and stabilize it. And that's the purpose of all the method, technique, skillful means, even chanting, dynamic meditation or whatever that suits your character, you can use them. Then after you train until this sati is very, very subtle, very peaceful, very quiet, then all of the spiritual mind state can arise. Mind state like piti, sukha, leading to pasati, they can arise. Piti is a type of spiritual joy, spiritual rapture that comes with a tranquil mind, a peaceful mind. When there is sati, no thought, then piti can arise. Then when piti continue to stabilize, it can transform into the more refined state of sukha, or they call blissfulness. Then from there, your mind can continue to settle down and become more and more peaceful, more and more quiet, until finally it's tranquil, still, no movement. And that is pasati, that is sati, that is the silent mind. And then you just stabilize it. Stabilize it. You can stabilize it, it will become samadhi. It will become collected. It will become unwavering. So this is called samadhi. Samadhi is not concentration. Samadhi is not what people think. Some call it jhanas. They say the samadhi are the 8 jhanas. If it's the 8 jhana, no need to use another word. The Buddha would have put in jhana, but he put samadhi, which is collectedness of mind, unwavering mind. The one in jhana also have this characteristic, but it's a conditioned state. It's collected, unwavering, but energy field. All thought kill into one, like no thought. Then the mind very calm, very peaceful, very concentrated. And then you think that is samadhi. It is a form of samadhi, but born of a conditioned state, born of energy field, not born of a free mind. Whereas the real samadhi in this spiritual faculty is born of a free mind, without energy field, just relaxed, silent, and aware, because of the ability to be mindful. Then when you have sati and samadhi, there is no thought. Then in the midst of life, when you see something, hear something, or think of something, or when there is a contact that arises, sense experience, because of samadhi, your mind is collected and unwavering. It does not stir. It does not react. That's why there is no sensual desire and ill will. Then because of that, it can see things as they are. That's why it can understand what is going on. That's why you can develop the direct seeing, giving rise to the wisdom, which is the last of the 5 spiritual faculties. When these 5 fall into place, when wisdom is there, all the hindrances are gone. Then when samadhi and sati is there, there is no more sensual desire and ill will. There is no more restlessness of mind. There is no more sleepiness. There is no more doubt. Then the mind becomes very established. in a meditative state of inner peace, inner awareness, and inner silence. And such a mind is beautiful. And this is what meditation is all about. So the key focus is, if you need to train, you train your mind. Develop mind supreme method combined with metta. Okay? Then if you already train, skillful already, then you don't need to do that. You can skip the mind supreme method. You can skip the metta. You can straight away go into either anapanasati to stabilize the state, or any skillful means, method or technique that you are more adapted to or more suited to, then you can use it. There is no restriction on method and technique and skillful means. You can use anything that is more suited to your character, more suited to your way of developing this stability of mindfulness. When you understand that this is your focus, every time you meditate, you don't get distracted. You always inquire, am I training my mind to be mindful, to be aware? Am I stabilizing it? Am I using this trained mind to meditate? Then all the other not related questions will disappear. Then you will not be distracted by all those mind states that arise. This understanding will actually bring forth clarity of mind for you to actually progress very, very fast. So that meditation can be done with clear understanding. Okay? So this is what you need to do. Then after you have done that, you can actually, if you do anapanasati or you do any method or technique, when your mind reaches the state of very, very subtle, like no more movement, like you cannot feel your breathing or you cannot feel your rising and falling, like everything has become so quiet, so peaceful, so still, that is a state of mind that is in paucity or tranquility, stillness. That is the meditative state. So you just silent after that. Don't do anything. Don't even go and do sitting touching. Just silent, relax, and aware with it. Then allow the mind to be. Then see what happens. If your anapanasati take you to your heart, then you stay at the heart. Then you find out what happened. Or any technique or method that you use, finally it will still fall to the heart. But do not be too eager to go there. You allow the spiritual faculty to develop until the sati is very stable. Then sati samadhi, when it's very stable, it will fall to your heart. Initially, you can stay at your breathing or your object of meditation. Then develop it until very, very stable and very clear. Then see what happens. When you silent from there, whatever that goes on within your six sense basis, upon contact, what happened, you will come to understand. That's what meditation is all about. To insight into phenomena, to understand how you function as a human being, to develop the investigative, what they call training, to investigate into all the Dhamma that the Buddha has taught you. Whether the dependent origination that the Buddha taught you, upon contact, feeling arise, then feeling, condition, craving, you can find out whether it's true or not. Then why the Buddha say, avijja paccaya sankhara, dependent or ignorant, sankhara, activity of mind, thinking arise. All this you can witness within your meditation. Then all the essential Dhamma, that, like the three evil roots, the five spiritual faculty, five hindrance, four noble truths, seven factors of enlightenment, and all the related dhammas. You can come to experience them when your mind is trained. Okay, now we're off the line. Then you can develop your meditation. For those who are new, you still need some instruction for the mind sweeping method. I will go through it quickly. Relax body and mind. Make sure you have a stable posture. Then backbone, try to straighten it out. Then just breathe in, breathe out normally. Then maintain silence of mind. You can either close your eye or open your eye, it's up to you. Then maintain attention at your forehead, feel, don't think, feel. If there's any tension, any tightness or any stress within, you just silently relax. Relax and relax. Until you can feel it soothingly relax. Then you move your attention down to your eye muscle, do the same. Feel, relax. Feel the eye muscle, ciliary muscle, fully relax. Then you move your attention down to your facial muscle, feel them all. Each and every strand, relax and relax and relax. Then in order to help you further to relax, you can visualize yourself facing a mirror radiating a radiant smile. When you can radiate a radiant smile, there is joy inside you. And because of that joy, you are in a very relaxed state. And your facial muscle will naturally relax. Then you combine your loving kindness or metta to radiate inner well-being to yourself. Then you recite, following me, may I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. Feel the well-being and happiness within your entire body and mind, your entire being, each and every cells within. And you can repeat, may I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. Feel the well-being and happiness within your entire being. And this will give rise to inner peace leading to inner well-being. Then you continue to radiate. May I, this body and mind of mine, be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May it too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within the hearts. Then you can radiate this same loving kindness of metta to your loved ones. May all my loved ones too be well and happy, well and happy. Free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. Free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then you can continue to radiate this same metta to all beings within this vicinity. May all beings within this vicinity of Sui An and Mifong House, known and unknown, seen and unseen, be well and happy, well and happy, free from all harm and danger, free from all suffering, both mental and physical suffering. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. Then may there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. then we can continue to radiate to all Kayanamitas, Dhamma friends, co-meditator, and all beings within the entire Subangjaya, Selangor, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, planet Earth, Mother Earth, our solar system, our galaxy, our Milky Way, and the entire universe. May they all to be well and happy, well and happy. Free from all harm and danger. Free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May their mind states to be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within your hearts. By now you should be more calm and more peaceful. Then you can come back to your facial muscle. Just relax everything and just feel. If there is any tightness, tension or stress within, you just relax them all. Feel it soothingly relaxed. Then you feel your neck, your shoulder, relax. Your hand back to shoulder, relax. Then you move your attention to your heart or your chest area. You just silence everything. You can detect any vibration or your heartbeat. Then you just silence everything and stay there. If you are new, you can't, then it's okay. You just feel, just like you feel your forehead. Just feel and relax every part. Then you move on to your stomach, feel, relax. Abdomen, do the same, feel, relax. Buttock, feel, relax. Then leg. Then you can reverse this whole mind sweeping method from your leg back to your forehead. You feel your leg, relax. Buttock, relax them. Abdomen, feel, relax. Stomach, feel, relax. Heart, feel, relax. Shoulder, hand, feel, relax. Back to shoulder, neck, facial muscle. Then eye muscle and forehead. By now, you should be more calm and more peaceful, less thinking, less heedless. Then now you can start to train this mind that you have developed so that it has this ability to be mindful within the moment. You can anchor it to any skillful means or method or technique that you are familiar with. If you don't have, you can use your breathing to anchor it. The Buddha called this training anapana sati. Anapana is in and out breath, sati is mindfulness. Anapanasati is mindfulness of in and out breath. So to do this is very simple. You just silence your mind and feel. Feel your breathing in front of your nostril. Just silence your mind in front of your nostril and feel the breathing. Then breathe in, breathe out naturally. As the awareness of your mind detect the feeling or the breathing, you just silence your mind and allow the mind to follow the breath, the breathing. Just mindful of it, aware. Like the Buddha said, breathing in, aware. Breathing out, aware. Initially, if you are not skillful, you have not developed the training, then it is not so straightforward. The mind tends to wander off very fast, split second is gone. But don't worry, Anapanasati is very easy if you have the patience to train. Every time the mind wanders off, bring it back. Wanders off, bring it back. If you are patient enough, sooner or later it will settle down. Then you will develop the ability to be mindful of this in and out breath. Then as it stabilizes, you will become more calm and more peaceful, just like what I described earlier on. You will experience piti, sukha, and paucity. Yeah? So you just train this way. Okay, I will let you continue with your training and meditation. Then I will ring the bell after about 15 minutes. Then after that, if you want to continue to meditate, you can. If you have enough, you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. The mind that is trained is very different, very beautiful. It listens to you. You want it to be silent? You will just be silent. You want it to be peaceful? You will just be peaceful. You want it to be relaxed anyway? You will just do that. And this is the meditative mind that the Buddha wants you to develop the training. So that you are ever mindful throughout the day, and when you go back to your daily life, you can use this mind to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, especially the Four Foundations of Mindfulness in daily life. That is the real meditation. Noble Eightfold Path can only be cultivated in daily life. It is only in the daily life that you can cultivate all of the eight path factors within Noble Eightfold Path. Starting with right view, leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Then you have the four right effort. Then you have samadhi, and samasati, a total of eight. To live life, you need to act, you need to speak, you need to think. That's why the Noble Eightfold Path, right thought, right speech, right action, and right living, they are all there. Then you have to have right view with regards to the nature's law that governs life and existence. Otherwise, you cannot understand life, you don't know how to live. Then you need to arise the right effort to constantly purify your thought. Develop the wholesomeness of thought, prevent the arising of unwholesome thought. Then whatever unwholesome thought that has arisen, you have to abandon them through right effort. Then cultivate all the virtue, the goodness, the wholesomeness that are still not in you. Then finally, right effort to refine upon them all and perfect them. Then mindfulness is to cultivate the four foundations leading to liberation, awakening. Then when mindfulness is very stable, samadhi will follow. Then when sati and samadhi is in place, you will insight in the phenomena. You will have the ability to see things as they are very clearly, to develop the wisdom, which is the last of the five spiritual faculties that can help you. Okay, with that we will continue with our chanting. Turn to page 6. We will do the invocation. I will read the English invocation, then we will get Ingbi to help us to chant the Pali. Invocation to the Devas. In the universe in their entirety, let the deities or Devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and relates Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine.
Samantha Chakravalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Sadhammam Munirajasa Sunantu Sakkamokkhadam Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta Dhamma savana kalo ayam badanta. Dhamma savana kalo ayam badanta. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Iti peso bhagavā arahaṃ sammā sambuddho vicācarana sampanno sugato lokavido nuttarao purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusana buddho bhagavati. Svākāto bhagavata dhammo sandhitiko akāliko ehi pāseko opanayiko pācatāṁ veditato inohiti. Supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho. Ujjupatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho. Nyayapatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho. Samichi patipanno bhagavato sakasango. Yadidam chattari sasyukani atta purisa pugala esa bhagavato savakasango. Ahuneyo, ahuneyo, dakeneyo, anjali karaneyo, anutarang punyaketang lokasati. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we pay respect to Tripa Jamma. Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādemi. Svākāto bhagavata dhammo dhammaṃ namassāmi. Supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho sanghaṃ namāmi. Okay. Tonight, like I promised you all last week, I supposed to do that special sutta that explain the seven stages of purification, Sata Visuddhi. So I think we have to run through that. Then if we have the time, I will share with you some of these meditative questions that Kayanamita sent to me. Okay, this particular sutta is very useful, and Sister Ingby, I think, she wrote to me. She said, "Bratio, can you please help explain this particular sutta again?" Because it involves the seven stages of purification. Then I think when she went into the Facebook, she saw one of the write-up in Nalanda, where Brother Tan Ho Soon was going through this one, describing it in a way where it is very, very important. Because this will actually give rise to a lot of good understanding of what the whole cultivation is all about. So in this particular sutta, they call it the Ratta Vinita Sutta, or the Sutta on the Seven Stages of Purification. So this Sutta is quite unique. This Seven Stages of Purification in Pali is called Sata Visuddhi. And they are presented through a dialogue in which the question of Venerable Sariputta are met with striking reply from Venerable Punna Mantaniputta, all meant to highlight some feature of this teaching. I will read you the sutta first, then I will go into the explanation. Sariputta, Venerable Sariputta asked, he said, "Friend, is the holy life live under the Blessed One?" Then Venerable Mantap, is it? What is his name? I forgot. Short form, Manta. Venerable Manta. He said, "Yes, friend." "Then, friend, is it for purification of virtue, Sila Visuddhi, the first purification, that the holy life is lived under the Blessed One? What do you think?" There are seven stages of purification. So Sariputta said to this monk, he said, "Friend, is the holy life lived under the Blessed One, means the Buddha?" So he answered, "Yes," he said. Then he asked the second question. He said, "Friend, is it for the purification of virtue that the holy life is lived under the Blessed One?" To purify the virtue, you go and they call it renounce, isn't it? You become a monk, renunciation. Then you're supposed to follow the Buddha. So you're supposed to live the holy life under the Buddha, the Blessed One. Then the question is, he said, "Friend, is it for the purification of virtue that the holy life is lived? What do you think?" "No." Very good. "Why no?" So virtue alone not enough. Very good, Sister Lian. So you have to understand, if you just like all those people gullible, you know what the analogy is trying to tell you. Because they say anapanasati is vipassana, or rising falling is vipassana. So what you do? Every time you meditate, you just do nothing. Or you call watching. you develop anapanasati. Every time you don't do this, you say you are not meditating. Then the holy life is what? Anapanasati, nothing else. That has nothing to do with the Noble Eightfold Path, Anasana. You cannot be so gullible, Anasana. So you understand the deep meaning, Anasana. That's why the monk Manta, he very wise, he told Sariputta, no, not for this friend, he said. Then Sariputta asked, then friend, is it for the purification of mind that the holy life is lived under the blessed one? So according to Lian, you have to purify your mind also. So is this what the holy life is all about? What do you think? Now we ask Lian. Also no. Now you're very smart. Very wise. Also no. Why? Because it's not just purifying the mind. Of course, the third advice of the Buddha is purify your mind. But purify your mind alone doesn't bring about insight yet. The mind that is purified has the possibility to do all those things, but it's not the end of everything. So that's why Venerable Sariputta received the same answer from Manta, Venerable Manta. He said, no, not for this friend. Then Sariputta asked, then friend, is it for the purification of view that the holy life is lived under the blessed one? Again, the answer is no. Then Sariputta asked, then friend, is it for the purification of overcoming doubt that the holy life is lived under the blessed one? Again, the answer is no. Then Sariputta continued with the fifth purification. He said, then friend, is it for the purification of knowledge and vision of what is path and non-path that the holy life is lived under the blessed one? No, not for this friend. Then Sariputta continued and asked, then friend, is it for the purification by knowledge and vision of the way that the holy life is lived under the blessed one? Again, the answer is no. Then the last of the seven purification, Sariputta asked, then friend, is it for the purification by knowledge and vision that this holy life is lived under the blessed one? Again, the answer is no. Then Sariputta asked, what then is the purpose, friend, of living the holy life under the blessed one? Then Venerable Manta, very wise, he answered. He said, friend, it's for the complete extinction without grasping that the holy life is lived under the blessed one. You understand? Huh? What is complete extinction? Means rooted out. No more delusion, no more grasping. Without grasping. So you must realize that, which is Nibbana. And that is the purpose of the holy life. So if you just do any of the seven or six of the seven purification, it's not enough. As I know, the Noble Eightfold Path is one path, not eight paths. The eight path factor constitute one path. And you finish that, you finish the seven stages of purification. That's why the whole cultivation is not what you think. And I have described it in the Heart Sutta, page 70, after we'll go through. I read this first. Then he gave an analogy, this Venerable Manta, he is very wise. So this reply reveals that not even the seven of the last purification is to be regarded as the sole purpose of living the holy life. The purpose is nothing but the complete extinction of all defilement without any kind of grasping. In other words, it is the realization of Nibbana, the unconditioned, or they call it the uncompounded element, Asangata Dhamma Adatu. Then to clarify this point further, Venerable Punya Manta Niputta gives the following parable of the relay of the chariot. This is a very good example. He said, friend, it is as though the king Pasanandi of Kosala was staying in Sarvati. Then something very urgent is to be done in Sakarta. And 7 relays of chariots would be arranged for him between Sarvati and Sakarta. Then friend, King Pasanandi of Kosala had left Sarvati by the palace gate. Might mount the first chariot in the relay, and by means of the first chariot, he would reach the second chariot in the relay. He would dismiss the first chariot in the relay and would mount the second chariot. So you know what is relay, like passing baton, then the next one take over. So he continued until the 7th one, until he reached the palace gate in Sakarta. Then Venerable Buddha asked a very good question. He said, in the case of the 7 purification, the purity implied is reckoned in terms of elimination of unwholesome factors, opposed to each purification. Like purification of virtue imply all those things. Eh? Then they continue. I think I missed out one page. I think I missed out one page. Yeah, you have. Very good. Yes. So is it answering? I missed out this one. He said, by means of the 7 relay chariot, he would finally arrive at the door of the inner palace of Sakarta. So as he arrived there, his friend and companion relative, kins, would ask him, great king, did you come from Sarvati to the door of inner palace of Sakarta by means of this chariot? So what is the answer? Answering in what way, my friend, would King Pasanandi of Kosala answer them correctly? Answering in this way, my friend, he would answer them correctly. Just now, as I was staying in Sarvati, some urgent business arose in Sakarta. Between Sarvati and Sakarta, 7 relay chariots were made ready for me. Coming out of the door of the inner palace of Sarvati, I got to the 1st, then finally to the 7th. So what he's trying to tell you is, if you only use one horse, you cannot reach your destination. That horse is too tired. And by the time it reached the 2nd destination, it's already pumped out. So meditation is the same. You cannot use effort all the way. There are times where you need to purify virtue. There are times you need to purify your mind, citta. Then after that, you straighten your views. Then all the other stages of purification has to follow. It's just like Noble Eightfold Path. The whole of meditation is Noble Eightfold Path. You cannot just focus on the 4 foundation of mindfulness, which is Samasati. Understand that? Because if you, let's say, finish off Samasati and you complete the training and develop very beautiful understanding and insight, but you don't have right view with regards to the other spiritual law that governs life and existence, then you don't have right thought leading to right speech, right action and right livelihood. Your speech are still very crude. Your action are still very crude. Your thought process are still very crude. So this does not fulfill the cultivation of Noble Eightfold Path. It just fulfills one of the very important path factors. So likewise here, The analogy is you need 7 different strong, healthy horses to complete the relay so that the king can reach in time, so that all the horses can run and they are all connected. Just like the analogy I gave last time, the Noble Eightfold Path. In the mahjong, those who know how to play mahjong, you know this. Qing is like a qing is a jiu zi lian huan. You heard of this or not? Gao ji lian huan. When you have 111 and 999, then in between 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, total of 13 cards. How many cards you call? How many cards do you call? Let's say Tong Ji or Sok Ji or Man Ji. You have 3, 1, 3, 9, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in between. How many cards you call? No, you call all the 9. So 1 to 9 game. Means any of this Tong Ji come or any Man Ji come or any Sok Ji come, you will just game. That is what? Jiu Zi Lian Huan, because they form together. So like the 7 factors of enlightenment when they come together, or the 7 stages of purification when they come together, you sure destined for enlightenment. Because any card come, you will just fit in. Means you already have the wisdom. Nothing can make you miserable anymore. So this sutta is the same. So, and this was said, Venerable Sariputta said to Venerable Punya Manta Niputta. He said, what is your name, friend? He hasn't even know his name. And how do you, and how do your companions in the holy life know you? He said, my name is Punya, friend. And my companion in the holy life knows me as Manta Niputta. Then Sariputta said, how amazing, my friend, how astounding. The Venerable Punya Manta Niputta had answered point by point with profound discernment in the manner of a learned disciple who has rightly understood the Buddha's message. It is again a great gain for any of his companions in the holy life who get to see him and visit him. Even if they had to carry him around on a cushion placed on top of their head in order to see him and visit him, it would be a gain for them, a great gain. And the fact is, I have gotten to see him and visit him and have been again a great gain for me. When this was said, Venerable Punya said to Venerable Sariputta, and what is your name, friend? And how do your companion in the holy life knows you? My name is Upatissa, friend. And my companion in the holy life know me as Sariputta. What? I've been talking to the chief disciple, who is like the teacher himself without knowing that you are Venerable Sariputta. See, the two of them, very good. Had I known it was Venerable Sariputta, I wouldn't have answered at such length. And I said, he said, wasting time. Sariputta can understand very fast. How amazing, my friend, how astonishing that Venerable Sariputta has questioned point by point with profound discernment in the manner of a learned disciple that has rightly understood the Buddha's message. So he repeated the same. So in this way did both great beings rejoice in each other's good words. So this is what the sutta is all about. So now I will explain to you the actual 7 stages of purification. You turn to page 70, you have the heart sutta. Those who don't have, never mind, you can listen. Page 71.2. The seven stages of purification or Sattva Visuddhi as taught by the Buddha are as follows. The first purification, the Buddha said, Sila Visuddhi. Sila is morality or precepts. So purification of morality or virtue. I put there, we are keeping one's precept. Why do you purify your precepts? Why is Sila Visuddhi so important? And how do you do it? Of course, if you read what I write here, is we are keeping your precepts. But why do you do this? Do you know the purpose or not? Why is purification of Sila or virtue so important? Good. Take care of karma is one of them. What else? Of course, it's avoid all evil. That's why you understand the law of karma, where there is right view. You have to avoid all evil and so on. That's why you have to keep your precepts. That's why you have to purify your precepts. The question is, why did the Buddha say that? If I don't purify my precept, what happened? No what? Yeah, you will have a lot of problem in life there, because you will go against the nature's law there of karma. So when you violate that law, what happened? You reap what you sow. Then you get into deep trouble. And that is one small part only. If you choose to be heedless and become miserable, it's your own right to choose to live like that way. But if you are a cultivator, I tell you, if you don't keep your precept, if you don't purify your precept, you know what is going to happen to you or not? You focus on this one. The hindrance will be there. If you violate your precept, what happens? Let's say you kill people, you harm people, you steal, misappropriate, commit CBT, then you cheat on your spouse. Then you tell lie. You speak harshly, heedlessly, backbite and do all those funny things. Then you partake in intoxicant, take drugs and all those things. What will happen to you? You will get yourself into big trouble in that arena. Police will come after you. People will take revenge. Then when people come to know, they will take action against you. So what happened? People who violate the precept has a lot of fear, worry, anxiety, and problem. Understand? And your karmic offense becomes so strong. Understand? Because these are all karmic negativity. And every time when you go into meditation, when you want to meditate, the hindrances are so powerful. The karmic offense are so powerful. That's why you cannot meditate. That's why the Buddha always teach one. In order to do meditation, what is the first thing you must have? Sila, samadhi, and panya, anasana. So without sila, how to develop samadhi? Samadhi is the meditative state of sati and samadhi, panya, power, perfecta. So sila is very important. But before sila, there is another one. What is it? Dana. That's why you have the other one. Dana, sila, and bhavana. Anasana. These are the essential dhamma that the Buddha teach. So bhavana is samadhi and panya. Anasana. So that's why this one is connected here. So sila is the same. Then what is dana? Generosity. That's why you have this generous heart to help people, to be charitable, to be generous. That's why you make offering. You make contribution and donation for building funds and many, many activities to relieve suffering. You donate to Tzu-ji and others' organization. Then you become very generous. You donate for publication, give for truth. And there is so much virtue in generosity, in dana parami. You can also offer food as dana to the monks, to those who are worthy of offering. Then you can be generous with whatever you have. You can share with people. So generosity is a great parami. That's why the Buddha knew you must have generosity. You must have dana parami. And this is a very important virtue. If you want to be successful in life, then if you invoke the power of dana or generosity, then it can bring forth the causes and conditions for you to walk the path of Dhamma. That's why you need to have merits. You need to have dana parami, so that when you are born into this world, you will have the causes and conditions to accumulate the four requisites. Not only as a monk after you renounce, but even as a lay person. Maslow's need theory, you remember? The basic necessity of life, what are they? What are the four things? Food, shelter, and money. Because civil society, you talk about financial freedom. So food and shelter is more important. After you have food and shelter, you need to have money and medication. Then only you talk about your higher needs, understand? Then that time, when you already have all these basic needs, and then you talk about promotion, status, self-esteem, and all such things. Then to be successful in a different way. So meditation is the same. You need to develop all this. So sila visuddhi, you must understand why you have to cultivate. Without sila, you have a lot of karmic obstruction, always remember. Then without sila, you have a lot of problems. Problems lead to what? Because you violate the precept. You cause to kill and harm, you got a lot of enemy. Police case, everything come after you. Even office CBT, you also get yourself into deep trouble because society's law come after you. So this type of being cannot have peace if you violate your precept. You cheat on your spouse, worse still. Every night cannot sleep. Worry that the spouse will come to know. And when you have a very fierce spouse, especially men, you have a very fierce one. I have seen one, my brother's generation. I tell you, that one was pitiful. But he reaped what he sowed. End up the whole kampong know about it. The wife was very, very fierce. And they say she up here got problem one. Because she became so jealous and so angry. You know what she did on her? I better don't tell you. After you go and learn all this not so wholesome thing. So never do that. Because when you have a lot of this problem, you got a lot of restlessness, fear, worry, anxiety. Your mind is not peaceful. And such a mind cannot meditate. So there's a purification of virtue. Sila visuddhi is very important. And sila visuddhi demand a lot of discipline. That's why the precept is phrased in such a way, I undertake the training rule to abstain. Means what? You really take this seriously. That's why you don't want to break. That's why you undertake the training rule. Means you ever mindful not to break this precept. And how not to break this precept? If you don't have mindfulness, if you are not heedful, if you don't know what constitutes evil, that's That's why the essential Dhamma, you have to study them. You think keep precept very easy. Every day chant, Panatipatta, Viramani, Sikha, Padang, Samadhi, Yami. Here chant, they kill. Mosquito, fly, bah. Then what type of precept is it? You don't even understand what you are trying to undertake. You have to reflect, contemplate deep into life. Life is so precious. You put your shoe in, yourself in the shoe of the mosquito or the fly. If a giant come and smash you out, how you feel? You think it's very fun? There is life, Anasana. And although they being the creature is so small, you know how it die or not? It die of shock, Anasana. So you smash too many of all this, you end up road accident or in a plane also die of shock. Zonk. The whole thing just explode and smash you out. So you reap what you sow. So you want to avoid all those causes. Then don't kill or don't cause to kill. So these are very vital understanding. And all precepts, you look at it. The Buddha already explained to us, only heedless people who has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion violate the precept. We take, for example, the first precept. Panatipata, Viramani, Sikha, Padang, Samadhi, Yami. And always remember the last few words, Viramani, Sikha, Padang, Samadhi, Yami. Always repeat it. And do you know what that means or not? Yeah? That one means I undertake the training rule to abstain, no? From panatipata, killing and causing harm to fellow living beings. Means, this is serious matter. You undertake the training rule not to kill and not to harm. Then you have to be serious about it. You have to be ever mindful to do it. Who kill? Who harm? What type of person do that? Heedless people who are violent, angry, selfish, deluded. That's why the three evil roots are all there. Then who steal? Greedy people, selfish people, deluded people. Then who commits sexual misconduct? Lustful people. Lust is also greed, no? Don't go and interpret, hey, Buddha say greed only, no, I don't have greed, no, I only lustful, no. You like that study Dhamma. Everything also justify. I got no anger, no. But I inside very bosong. You like that study Dhamma. You feel forever stuck there. Because you're not serious and you don't want to understand, you want to justify. Then sometimes you work in certain office. This one, office one, never mind. Like they say, akong one, can use. Then you take, it's from this small, small thing that you start to compromise. Then later you compromise bigger thing. Where you don't see the danger, it's never worthwhile. You cannot afford, then don't have. You can afford that. Have it. If you need, then pay or ask permission. You don't mind. I later buy and replace. Then sometimes, if you are being honest and sincere, you request, people can just give it to you. Say, never mind, you use. So all this is mental training because there are nature's law that governs all this. Basically, it's law of karma. So we move on. So this Sila Visuddhi, you understand? Okay. Then what is the second one? Chitta Visuddhi. What is Chitta Visuddhi? Chitta is content of consciousness and mind. Consciousness and its content. So purification of mind or content of consciousness. This one deal with the three evil roots. They are an awareness of how it arises to condition you into negativity. then how to root them out via wisdom to develop the wholesome state of mind. So this one we have covered, the five ways that the Buddha teach. And initially, if it's to deal with the thought, then it is the four right effort. Understand? Yeah. So the three evil roots, if you have developed the understanding of the essential Dhamma of the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, in Pali is called Lobha, Dosa, and Moha. And the meaning is very deep, very wide. It covers a very wide aspect of mental states. Yeah. So not until you understand them, you cannot cultivate them. Because they are the roots of all evil. They make you evil, understand? Like anger, hatred, envy, jealousy. These are the evil root of hatred, or what they call dosa. When they are in your heart, when you keep and hold on to this anger, this hatred, this envy, this jealousy, they are the root of all evil. They make you very evil. When you have anger, you are violent, karena. You are emotional, and you can cause to harm and kill. Then when you have lust, craving, desire, greed, selfishness, what happens? Make you very evil. You know what greedy people will do. They will cheat, deceive, and misappropriate things. And you know how lustful people think and do. So all this will make you evil. Then when you have a lot of delusion, you have a lot of fear, worry, anxiety, and you are heedless, you simply do things. That's why you kill. You become emotional. The other evil root all manifest where you believe you exist. Then you become selfish. Then you can become emotionally very, very negative. Then you can have also fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lament. So delusion is the worst evil root. So citta visuddhi is very important. After you have cultivated your morality, you know how to avoid all evil. Then you have to do good. Understand? Citta visuddhi is to do good, to avoid all evil and do good. That's why you have the four right effort. Then the five ways to overcome unwholesome thought, unwholesome action, speech, and livelihood, the way you live your life. So this is where the purification stands out very clearly. During the initial phase of your cultivation, you cannot take care of these two, you cannot go to the third one. Purification of view, ditti visuddhi. You must have right view, the Buddha said, with regards to the laws that govern life and existence. Not only the scientific law of uttu niyama and bija niyama, the physical and biological law, but also the spiritual law of karma, the spiritual law of mind. That's why you have karma niyama, citta niyama. Then the third, spiritual law of dhamma or truth. If let's say you straight away go and say you want to purify your views, when you don't keep your precepts, when your mind state are still so crude, and so you never purify your citta or content of consciousness. Got meaning or not? You can say, hey, I got right view, no, I know what karma is, oh. But you cannot keep your precept. You cannot avoid evil to good. No. Then what type of cultivation is that? That's not. So that's why you have to go step by step, and they are all related, interconnected. So straightening of one's view is very important. And the key thing is to break the self-delusion. Especially the Four Noble Truths. When the Buddha talked about the First Noble Truth, final summary, he said, in short, it is due to your self-delusion that condition you to grasp and cling onto this so-called fine aggregate of form and mind, the two aspects. You have to read the Green Book, who are you, what are you, to understand. Then when you penetrate that, you don't have Sakkaya Ditthi, self-delusion, then the other two evil roots also will go. Without the self, there is nobody to be greedy and selfish. Asana, to be emotional, angry or unhappy. Then no one to fear, no one to worry. That's why your problem is all resolved. That's why you have to purify your view. When you understand that this is not you, your problem already so much reduced. Then you use this to live. You understand that this is karmically conditioned for you to use, to live. The form and the mind, a vehicle and a tool for you to use to live life. So can follow, huh? The first four. First three. The fourth one is what? Oh wait, the third one I didn't finish the last sentence, huh? I read the whole thing. Purification of view so as to arise the right view with regards to the law of karma, four noble truth, law of dependent origination, and to cultivate the rest of the noble eightfold path factor. To know the difference between right and wrong views, to develop the true understanding according to reality, and to see things as they are. So this is to bring forth the right view, the right understanding to cultivate, to walk the path of Dhamma. And then only you can move on to the fourth one. What is the fourth one? Purification of what? Huh? Overcoming doubt. Why do you doubt? You're not sure. So, what are doubts? Yeah? What are doubts? Mental hindrance contribute to one of the... one of the mental hindrances is doubt. So this is the purification by overcoming doubt. So you need to actually move in to actually develop the right understanding. You are doubtful because you don't have understanding, correct or not? So what did the Buddha teach you? Yeah? Do not even believe him, correct or not? So what must you do? Investigate into everything. That's why purification of doubt means no more doubt. Because you have investigated into his teaching. Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, 21, 22, 23, Dhammapada verse 183, the Four Noble Truths, the Dependent Origin. With sati you can investigate Dhamma. Then when it stand up to investigation, what happened? You got no more doubt. Your faith become very strong, understand or not? Then when you are able to understand the whole cultivation clearly, you will be very wary of the 10 defilement of insight. The very, very special mind state that you go through as you develop your cultivation. Then this 10 defilement of insight trap cultivator. You become complacent and all those things. So that is the one that you need to develop understanding. So you investigate and find out and develop this clear understanding. So here I put purification of overcoming doubt. No more doubt because it has overcome the 10 defilement of insight that bound the cultivator to complacency and misguide the belief of realization. Sometimes you can have that thought. No? You cultivate until your daily mindfulness throughout the day, like you're very mindful. But most of them actually do it in a retreat condition. Then you think, oh, like the book say, like the monk say, the arahant is ever mindful throughout the day. Wow, you think you somewhere near there or you already there. Then you become so excited. Then the Dhamma like, wow, all the Dhamma, although it's knowledge, it like very clear to you. Yeah, this is anicchang, this is dukkang, this is anatta, non-self, not me. But suffering come, still me. Then you become so excited. And these are defilement of insight. They give you very good mind state, but it's a conditioned state you cannot understand. Because when you go back into society, when you are out of the retreat, then you realize you haven't changed. The defilement are still there. Self-delusion are still there. The evil roots are still there. The hindrance are still there. Because you cannot be heedful in the midst of daily life. You can only be more or less more quiet, peaceful, and more so-called mindful, in inverted commas, in a retreat condition, understand or not? Or in a conditioned state or environment or setting. Then you're too eager to teach. Then you're very excited. Then you come out. And because you are not ready, you get yourself into trouble. Then you start to argue, you start to do all those funny things. So that's why this part, purification of overcoming doubt, is very important. Yeah, later on, they become doubtful also. How come I still like that? Then when something happened, they realize they still have fear, they still have worry, they still have anxiety, because you cannot lie, understand? And then they become doubtful. Actually, how on the cultivation? I thought I cultivated already, but still didn't cultivate. So what happened? So all these questions will start to arise. So this purification of overcoming doubt is very important. That's why you have to investigate into the Dhamma until the Dhamma stand out to investigation. Then you have to go into daily life. You have to cultivate noble eightfold path. Then you have to develop all those clear understanding. Then not trapped by the 10 defilements of insight. The 10 defilements of insight are very powerful. The first one is obasa. You know what is obasa? Not the Japanese word obasang. Obasa is seeing light. They call nimitta. Wow, you got so excited. Then they can play, it's like energy fields. And they can make it big and small and strengthen it and do all the very fantastic meditation. Then they develop energy field, jhana, everything. Then they can see this, see that and penetrate. Then they think they already enlightened because they equate meditative experience as enlightenment. Not knowing that the only thing that frees the mind and liberates the mind is wisdom, nothing else. So all this, if you are not careful, you get trapped. That's why purification or overcoming doubt is very important. Then we move on to the next one. Purification by knowledge and vision of what is path, what is non-path. Now this one is very important. So what is path? What is non-path? When you cultivate, you will know. Whatever in the name of meditation that doesn't bring you back to the Noble Eightfold Path is wrong path. Understand? Not path. You can say it's a fantastic meditation, but not taught by the Buddha. Understand? But a more important way of understanding is what? Non-path lead to what? Lead to more ego, the egoic self, more delusion. That's why I put here, purification by knowledge and vision of what is path and non-path. Non-path leads to delusion and suffering, whereas path leads to clarity of mind, non-negativity, peacefulness, stillness of mind, born of wisdom, understand? And non-egoic. Whereas non-path make your ego like very, very much strengthened. Like you become very important, you are different already. So the self delusion, sakadity is strengthened as well. Oh, I already arahan, I already want, I can do this, I can do that. So the I, the atta, the I and the me is very, very strongly rooted. So path and non-path, you will come to understand when you develop the Noble Eightfold Path cultivation. Whatever that deviates from Noble Eightfold Path is all non-path, understand? Means they don't have right view, they don't have right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood or right living. They don't have samasati, they don't have samasamadhi, they don't have the four right effort. And that is all non-path. That's why the Buddha, before his passing away, Parinibbana, there was one last person who met him. That person came and asked, he said, there are so many teachers in the world teaching different teaching. How am I to like make sure that which one is the right one? You know what the Buddha answered? He never say you follow me, then it's the right one. He never say that. He said, as long as in this world there is this Noble Eightfold Path, there will not be any lack of enlightened being. He only sees Noble Eightfold Path, nothing else. That's why the Fourth Noble Truth is Noble Eightfold Path. And it leads to the end of all suffering. And that is the meditation. That's why with Noble Eightfold Path, the path will be there. Without Noble Eightfold Path, you only do one small part of the Noble Eightfold Path. That is not what the Buddha teach. It's still non-path. Even the seven relay chariot, anasana, you focus on virtue. That is not path. It's only one small part. Even you focus on the mind, same. That's why you have to straighten your views. Then you have to overcome all your doubt. You have to be very clear so that your faith is very strong, so that you have clarity, so that you know what is path and non-path. Then you move on to the next one. What is the next one? Purification by knowledge and vision of the way. After you have understood, after understanding what is path, then you cultivate accordingly to realize the vision of the way. Means what? You know that path is Noble Eightfold Path. That's why you cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Understand not? That's why this is purification by knowledge and vision of the way. You know this is the Noble Eightfold Path. That's why you have to reflect, contemplate the three turning of the Four Noble Truths. To clearly understand what are the three spiritual right views. Without right view, you cannot have right thought. Understand not? And without right thought, thought, condition, action, and speech, you cannot have right speech and right action. And you cannot live your life appropriately. Then you don't know how to arise the four right effort because you don't know what is right and wrong. That's a right view is a prerequisite for Noble Eightfold Path cultivation. That's why it's the first path factor. And this is what right view is all about. The laws that govern life and existence, you have to understand them. And then the last one is what? Purification of what? Knowledge and vision of the way. This is about the direct seeing. Understand? This one is about penetrating insight into phenomena and other things. That's why jnana dasana visuddhi. Jnana is wisdom. Dasana is direct knowledge and vision of the truth and reality. Means seeing as they are. You have to purify to realize that. So this one is the realization or enlightenment born of the direct seeing or direct knowledge and vision of the way things are without thought. That's why you have to develop silent mind, daily mindfulness, until throughout the day you are more or less just aware without thought. Hardly any thought. Then you have to be with the moment of arising of phenomena, sustaining and the passing away, there and then, without thought. You cannot be mindful and silent to that extent. This last purification cannot be done. You have to awaken. Then when you awaken, this is what I used to share with most of you. Truth is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Agree or not? Yeah? Agree or not? Truth is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Because the reality is that, and what are truth? Everything that points towards the reality. And the Buddha said the most important truth are what? The three universal characteristics of nature, understand? They are impermanent, they are suffering state and non-self. That's why I always tell Kayanamita, for those who see, they always see. Because truth is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? True or not? If you have not done the seven purification, you cannot see. Your seeing is by the mundane mind, and the thinking mind, the conscious mind. Not the silent mind, not the true mind. That's why you cannot awaken the phenomena. You cannot insight or personal into the characteristics of nature. So now understand, huh? The seven purification, Satta Visuddhi. Not difficult, is it? Huh? Difficult. Not that difficult, is it? I tell you, this one, very few people can understand the Satta Visuddhi. And I have actually explained this quite a number of times, but I don't think many of you can get it. But now, today, after this sharing, because there were conditions, it will become a lot more clearer. Okay? Yeah, what's the time now? Wow, almost 10:30. Wow, we still got 5 minutes for Q&A. You can ask questions if you want. Yeah? Or clarify anything. Or you can share your whatever understanding, your input. Anybody got any question? Huh? Can I understand? Oh, tonight 48, not so big as that day. That day 50. Oh, 43. I thought you said hit 50. We are keep on coming until. Oh, tonight went to the back. Yeah, yeah. Back also full. Later on, staircase. Yeah, yeah. Then up there still got many terraces. Oh, yeah. Anybody want to clarify anything or make clear or ask any question related? Anybody? Wow, all understood. No question. Wow, sadhu, I must rejoice. paisei, then I ask. But this is a very difficult topic. Very difficult. Is it difficult? Oh, very beautiful. Those who understand, very beautiful. But those who are not so serious, I think, liabokyo, catch no ball. Because the whole cultivation is actually like that one. When you are not into it, you cannot appreciate the beautiful Dhamma. But when you are into it, you appreciate it so well. And you have so much joy. Just like Venerable Sariputta and Punya. Punya Mantani Putta. Oh, now I can remember. You see, the two of them were so humble. And they take the trouble to express their understanding so clearly. Then later on, when Venerable Sariputta praised him, then he asked back, may I know who your name, what's your name, and what your fellow holy colleague call you by. So the one he mentioned, Sariputta, he is the foremost disciple of the Buddha Sakyamuni, foremost in wisdom. So this Venerable Punya also knew, wow, if I have known that it's you, I no need to explain so much. So that's why both of them share greeting. So when you have true Dhamma, you will rejoice. You will sadhu each other. You will not try to challenge. Oh, I know more than you. Who would try to challenge the thought which is egoic? That's want to be more famous, want to be right. That's why defilement of insight is very powerful. When you think you're already somebody, you already achieved something, then you behave that way. Then the ego, you cannot see. It's very subtle. That's why the whole cultivation is about being mindful, being aware of this subtle defilement, the subtle ego, even towards the end, mana, minor conceit. Very subtle inside there. Actually, the beginning of awareness to see your own defilement, to see your own evil roots, delusion, and shortcoming is the beginning of real cultivation. When you start to realize that, I remember during the early days, university graduate, especially you did so well in your academic field, you you were the cream of your state school. Then you came to University Malaya, like Sui and me from there. Oh, when we reach the university, only we know we are still nowhere. There are so many PRY so much smarter than you. You like nobody inside there. But then you start to realize, hey, in our own school, we think we are the top, we are the clear. But when we met even more smart and wise or intellectual people, then you realize you are nothing compared to them. That's why I strive on very hard. So I remember after I graduated, when I went to Brickfield, I took out the first book, no, Abhidhamma. I think it's a simplified version. Then I read, no. I say, your four elements. I study chemistry, so many elements. What the hell is all this? So we think we're very smart. So then Buddha said, ignorant. Are you a university graduate, a top student, or did so well academically? Ignorant, how can? Not until the day when I developed the daily mind, then I saw my own greed, my own selfishness, my own defilement, delusion. And then only I realized how ignorant that form of my mind was. That was the beginning of cultivation. Then I start to understand why the Buddha said living beings are really deluded. Really, really deluded. Full of ignorance. Ignorance doesn't refer to academic things. Ignorance refers to your lack of understanding of the truth, nature's truth that governs life and existence. Despite our education, we learn so much things, Karina, but we hardly learn about ourselves. Do you realize that? Nobody teaches you how you function as a human being. What is mind? And all those mind states, like the five aggregate of form and mind that the Buddha taught. So profound, so beautiful. But I study until university graduate. I never learn anything about myself. I use a lot of thought. Then we have a lot of knowledge and intellect. But we don't have wisdom. That's why not until you really, really develop mindfulness, you cannot understand what wisdom is. Without mindfulness, you don't have what they call spiritual life. You cannot develop spiritual wisdom or spiritual understanding. That's why the spiritual faculty or sati is very important. Not thought. Thought cannot bring you very far. Thought can make you very intellect, very smart, very clever, full of knowledge. But thought is egoic. Can never free you, can never liberate your mind. You must understand the purpose of thought and know how to use thought. That's why the user of thought is very important. If the user of thought is without wisdom, thought becomes evil, egoic. That's why all the evil roots arise. That's why this world is full of suffering, misery, problems. We have to end. So we will end here. And rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. We all should thank Sister Ingbi for bringing forth the condition. We rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will do the sharing of merits. Transform merits. Sharing of merit, said the devas. Akasata cha bumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa chirang rakantu loka sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits and may they long protect the dispensation. Ittavata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transfer merits to the departed one. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Let these merits accrue to our departed relatives, and may they all too be well and happy. Now we invoke the blessing for the nation. Devo asatakalena sasa sampati heto cha vito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season. May there be a rich and good harvest throughout. May the world be peaceful and prosperous always. May the government of the day, the king and the rulers, be righteous. Okay, now you make your aspiration. Ipmina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patia. By the grace of these merits that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish and the heedless, but only the wise and the enlightened one, until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect to Lord Buddha and all the worthy ones. Then we end. This rejoicing is very good. You can perfect it. Huh? It brings forth a lot of goodness. It opens up your heart. Then cultivation becomes very easy. Then it will cut away envy, jealousy, and all those negative states of mind. Huh?